It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented by Exterior Home Solution, local and trusted since 1999. If you have a need for any exterior renovations, garage, roofing, siding, whatever the case may be, contact Exterior Home Solutions today at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a lot of questions to get into here with Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, and Austin Price. We'll start with all underscore Vol. This is the most excited Tennessee football fans have been since when? 2022?
No, I mean, I don't think they had this level of an excitement to start the 2022 season at all. I think you got to go back to the mid-90s for me. You know, when you talk about the off season that's been in the summer that they had, talk about the playoff team, I think the national media is kind of getting on board where the Tennessee fans have been for several months. I think you got to go back to 95, 96, 97 in that world when a guy named Peyton Manning was playing quarterback to generate this kind of excitement. For me personally, now you guys may disagree with that, but that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Hubbard, there was a lot of pop. The team wasn't this good, but there was a lot of pop. Ainge's freshman year, the Britt Schaefer, Eric Ainge.
Well, there was a lot of pop in that 05.
The team was not as good. Don't get me wrong. After they beat Florida, you know, what was that? Oh, was that 04?
That was 04, yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The team was not this good, but there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of hype. There was a lot of pop. But again, it wasn't this level, but I mean, that's, I probably go back to then when Cut came back, and they were pretty good early in 07.
Well, when they beat Cal to open the season, then I mean that generated a bunch of buzz with that win. But I mean, I think everybody's been excited about this team since they left Orlando, because it was the start of. I mean, you go back to that 05 season, Austin, and I mean Philip Fulmer went to SEC Media Day and basically compared. Said Eric Ainge reminded him of a guy they had named Peyton Manning played quarterback, and we all know what happened to that team in 05. It didn't go very well. There was a lot of buzz then that didn't live up to the hype.
Yeah, you know, in more recent years, you could say 2016, just because, you know, they had come so close in 2015, and they did start the season with 5-0, and you had wins over Florida.
Good point.
Now, you kind of skated by Georgia on a Hail Mary, and you know, that Appalachian State game, Battle of Bristol, wasn't exactly, you know, beautiful football, but they were still undefeated. I mean, 01, they had, you know, they had the loss to Georgia, but I mean, they were sitting there playing in Atlanta with a chance to go play for the national title. Now, again, you're talking about that was at the end of the season. As far as early in the year, you know, I mean, perhaps is probably right. I mean, the only thing maybe would be not probably 2016, just again, because there was a lot of high hope, and there was a lot of really individual good players on that 2016 team. But
it's a good point on the 16 team. I overlooked them. That's a good point.
Well, but it's easy to because of how they finished.
True.
Like, you know, I mean, they finished like a dud. So, and it's on Josh and this team to, you know, not finish like a dud. They've got to go win at Oklahoma next week and then win at Arkansas. And at that point, then you start cooking with grease because you're coming back home. And home for a four-game homestand out of 5 weeks where, you know, you're going to be favored in at least three of the four games, maybe all four, depending on, you know, where Alabama's at the time.
We'll go to Sully Vol. Do we pretty much have our secondary figured out now, or will there continue to be competition for a couple of those spots?
I think he's going to keep playing. Don't you, Hubber? I mean, I think you're going to see him take and run. It's kind of what we thought all offseason. You know, once he kind of establishes himself, it's going to be hard to get him off the field.
Yeah, I mean, I just think they're going to rotate back there. I don't know how much it is, quote, competition, like for somebody to replace somebody in the lineup as a starter. But, I mean, I think they're set at corner, right? McCoy and Gibson are the two corners. I think there's I don't want to say a drop-off, but I think there's a little bit of a tiered level there. I mean, you look at two games, Rob. I mean, Boo Carter and Christian Harrison have split reps equally. So that one's continuing there. I think they're going to rotate. I mean, Jacoby Thomas, to me, is going to continue to play if he stays healthy. I mean, now, is he going to play 30 snaps? Is he going to play 18? But I do think they're going to play three safeties. They would like to get a fourth one. I think that's why this week is important. So I think their starting five is set, but I do think they're going to rotate – because there's not enough separation not to rotate at some of those positions back there outside of corner.
Dalval5 wants to know, what other than staying healthy do you want to see from this weekend against Kent State?
And I just don't think, what did you see against Chattanooga that convinced you about anything? The level of competition is going to be worse this weekend. I just like to see Nico, get some reps with the receivers, I guess would be my answer to that question.
I think I want to see, what Jordan Ross does and what Caleb Herring does and what those young offensive linemen do. Where is Satterwhite at the center position? How much more comfortable is he playing in his third straight game in college to develop there? I think that I don't know that we will be able to evaluate it and judge some of those guys there, Eric. But I think when you look at it, the takeaway from this is how where are some young – where's Mike Matthews, right? Where's Peyton Lewis with more opportunity? I think you have to evaluate it from that standpoint, with it being a given that you get off the field healthy with your starters.
Yeah, no doubt. Football is obviously a contact sport, so there's a chance of getting hurt, but you like to get out, injury free for the most part, avoid the big ones. And you want to see a lot of these young guys, especially a lot of these guys who are going to redshirt this year. I think there's a question coming up here in a little bit that we'll get to, like the guys who, played essentially in the NC State blowout or guys that might not be redshirted. I think there's something to that, but there's a lot of guys that still didn't play in that game, and you'll see them play in this game. I want to see what they look like, get a whole lot of reps. Guys like Jordan Ross, as you mentioned, who can really help the football team, just kind of buried at the depth chart right now. I want to see what those guys look like. I want to get some guys involved early. Mentioned on the roundtable yesterday or 2 days ago, like Chris Brazel. He leads the team in receiving, but it's almost like you didn't know that because they're spreading the ball around so much. I want him to find the end zone. So just a couple of things like that. But to Rob's point, the level of competition coming up on Saturday is going to be lower than what Tennessee opened the season with against Chattanooga. C.D. Giles says, after seeing the rotations of the first two games and our depth, do all the ors make more sense now? Brent, I think the ors, it's a silly conversation. A lot of those don't make sense. But at defensive line, at safety, at star, those ors very much make sense because they have been rotating a lot there.
Yeah, does Keenan Peely need an or by his name? No. Do we need to have an or between Jermod McCoy and whoever at corner? No.
I think my favorite is Lance Hurd, Larry Johnson.
Yeah, we know some of them are legitimate. Like the defensive line, that's fine. I got no problem with calling those ors. None whatsoever. But some of the other ones, Austin, were pointless.
They were, but I think for the coaches, it was just easier just to go all or none, and they just went all. I think that was the mindset, is just like, let's just do everybody as an or, and then nobody can say anything.
Another question here from the poster. Do you think the 12 personnel package will help us against Georgia this year?
It could. It certainly could. I still think you're going to have to pass protect a little better than you pass protected, last weekend when you played Georgia. I think it's something that, I don't think you do that heavily every game, but I think it's something you definitely could go to for, certain drives or to close out a football game or other spots, on the schedule against certain opponents.
Well, Georgia's not going to drop eight and rush three like NC State did. They have three-man fronts, but they're bringing somebody off of the edge, and they're going to play man on the corners, right? Isn't that what Kirby Smart's done? It hadn't been the biggest challenge for Tennessee in this game to beat press man coverage because receivers have been just physically kind of beaten up. I don't think George is dropping a bunch of eight, and saying, hey, run the football here. We're going to see how we're going to see if you're patient enough to do that. I think Georgia is going to be super aggressive. Even though it's a three-man front, they walk a guy up off the edge, right, Rob? How many times are they in a four-man look versus a three-man look? It's a different defensive scheme is my point.
Yeah, and I don't even want to – I couldn't get into it like somebody who follows Georgia does. But if you look – they're one of the most – I would say probably one of the most vanilla teams out there. You look at their pressure numbers. I think – My point being, I think Kirby plays it pretty vanilla. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of stuff you're going to take advantage of like you did against, you know, NC State. I mean, if you come out with the 12 personnel, Kirby's not going to throw his hands up in the air like Dave Doran did. You know, oh my God, they went big on us. What are we going to do?
Why not? Wants to know, how long do you think Nico plays against Kent State's? Also, please compare, Faison and George as prospects, AP.
I think he plays a half. I think in Josh Heupel's perfect world, he breaks the record he broke 2 weeks ago. and he comes out of the half, and it's Gaston Moore's show and Jake Merklinger's show. As for Faison, Brandon, and George, you know, I think a little bit, you know, they're a little bit different games. I think, you know, obviously Faison's a little bit bigger from a girth standpoint. His frame, I think, is going to be able to, you know, put on weight a little easier than George's frame. George will have to work to put on weight. And George has worked to put on weight. I mean, he's up about 195 right now, which is, you know, bigger than when Nico arrived here. So, I mean, like, people forget that, you know, Nico was just really skinny as well, tall and lanky. You know, as far as throwing the ball, you know, I like George's ability to throw from different angles. I think he does a really nice job of that. They both throw with great touch. And, you know, in this era, you can never have too many good quarterbacks because you never know who's going to hit and who's not going to hit. I mean, you know, you look at Georgia, they just kept taking guys and they found the ones that they liked and the rest have left or have been content playing, you know, backup roles. So I think you bring them all in, you can.
Govals 182 says the Prince of Bradley County told me that we would break the all-time scoring record at Neyland this Saturday. What is the record and will we break it? We did some research before the show, Austin. It looks like, what is it, 70 points in 2000 against Louisiana Monroe is the record at home at Neyland Stadium, correct?
Correct. The 1915 team, which was a juggernaut, scored 101 twice against Cumberland and Carson Newman, and then 80 against Center College. That was 1915. That was at the old Waite Field. Hubs, I'm sure you've been down to that location two or three times.
I covered that game, actually.
I'm sure you probably did. but
speaking of scoring, I know we're only three games in, but and this is a shout-out to Lane. Tennessee's averaging 60 points a game, and they're second in the SEC in scoring.
They're 85 points away from matching Tennessee's point total in Fulmer's last year for the entire season.
For 2008?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they're 85 points away from matching that. By the way, I did cover the Louisiana Monroe game. I guess you were probably there too, Austin. That one was a long day at the ball yard. That was one of those deals about, 3 minutes into the game, you were like, thank goodness this is an afternoon game, and how quick can this thing get done? I think that's going to be a vibe that you have Saturday night too.
Well, yeah, because I mean, let's face it. What happened in the Chattanooga game? About halfway through the second quarter, people were like, "I'm out." Now, part of that was it's hot. It'll be a little easier to stay in there a little longer because the sun will have went down, and it, you know, it should be decent weather, you know, Saturday night. But still, I mean, how many people are going to be like, let's beat the rush of traffic. Let's get out of here. I mean, you know, Nico just left the game. You know, I mean, that's going to happen. The whole second half will be played in front of 25,000 people.
We'll go to 16 for Prez. Is this the most alignment you've seen in UT's leadership in your career?
I mean, they were aligned when Joe Johnson was the president, chancellor, and Doug Dickey was the athletics director in the 90s. There was great alignment there. And obviously the focus was more football. They weren't as much of an everything school, if you will, at that point. But, I mean, the alignment that you have right now is where it's supposed to be. And it's where it was when Tennessee was at their best in athletics. And I mean, they had a good alignment when, Andy Holt and them back in the early 80s when it got going, but I wasn't around for that. I mean, you never heard in the 90s about Tennessee not being able to get something done in athletics because the other side of the street blocked it. And I think your alignments, you know, that's where you're at right now. I think they're in one accord with each other. So is it the best ever? you know, that's debatable. They're as successful as they've ever been in all sports. So you can make the case, yes. But I would also contend that in the 90s, the alignment was good.
And Hubbard, would you say, I mean, I don't know who's to blame for it, but after Coach Dickey left, I mean, it was all, I don't know where it started, but it became adversarial, it seemed like, between athletics and academics at some point.
Yeah, and I just think that was leadership, you know, and I mean, God rest Mike Hamilton's soul. I'm not going to pile on Mike at this point, but I just, you went from such a stern leader in Doug Dickey, and he didn't bully. People think he bullied across the street. They didn't. But, I mean, there was a level of respect, and there was a level of communication that took place there, and a level of trust. And when Mike came in, you know, Mike was learning on the job. He had been a fundraiser. He had never been a leader of an athletics department before. And I think that when you have that, you probably question more things, right? If whoever's in charge, it's their first time doing it. I think it's natural, Rob, and to question, okay, are they, you know, we're going to keep close tabs on that. Whereas I think in this case, and Dondi Plowman told me this, when she hired Danny White, I was talking to her at his press conference, and she said, I'm done with athletics. Like, I'm out. He's in charge. He's experienced. He knows what he's doing. I trust him. I've hired him. You know, it's his to run. I'm not micromanaging anything. I think he had some micromanagement going on early on in Mike Hamilton's career that then you got into different people in power on the campus side with the chancellor's office and things. And their vision of the university did not involve athletics. It was not athletics being that big of a deal. I think that's where Florida's at a little bit right now. I think that's what Florida's dealing with down there with their president situation and things like that. I think they're out of alignment. I mean, you had a chancellor at Tennessee who wanted to make the university smaller. He wanted to downsize the university because it was all about research, research, research. And he did not want the University of Tennessee to be the largest land grant. You know, he didn't want it to be the biggest school in the state of Tennessee. He wanted it to be smaller. Dondi Plowman's about growing and getting it bigger and using athletics as a platform. So the visions were very different at a point in time in the early 90s. And so then it did become adversarial because athletics felt like they were having to fight for everything, you know, because they didn't think that the university side wanted to win as much in athletics. And they didn't convey that they did want to win as much in athletics. And so that just created a, you know, a downward effect and obviously forced Tennessee athletics through the wilderness for way too long.
Let's go to Pine. Pine says, how much film or practice time do you think the coaches and or players are spending on Oklahoma this week, Rob?
I mean, I bet the coaches don't talk about Oklahoma to the players at all, but I would say when practice is over, I'd say there's a lot of Oklahoma film watching going on. That's my guess, my opinion.
You know, Ollie Lane on the GameQuest podcast to begin the season, because I asked him about the NC State game being the second game of the year, but you got to, you know, go through UTC first. And he said, yeah, I mean, they don't often like, you know, say, well, this is what NC State will do, but they'll mix things in and not like tell them that like stuff what NC State does. I see that happening in camp, Austin, but I think it's a little bit difficult to do that in season because, I mean, obviously your next opponent, you know, is going to be Kent State. You don't have a couple weeks in fall camp to kind of work on some different things. So I would assume that the focus is all going to be on Kent State, but maybe in scout team or something, they could throw some looks in there that would prepare them maybe for Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it makes it a little easier this week when you have a Kent State before Oklahoma, whereas let's go, like, if they wanted to prepare for Alabama, they can't do that because they're playing Florida, right? Like, you're preparing for Florida. It's a lot easier to kind of, you know, kind of work a little bit of that in when you are playing, you know, what many believe to be the worst team in college football.
Let's go next to this one. Based on your knowledge and sources around college football, including any conversations with the man himself, what are Hype's true feelings on Oklahoma separation and Bob Stoops? The Oklahoma separation and Bob Stoops, any insight into how all that unfolded?
Well, I mean, listen, the Stoops, I mean, Bob Stoops fired Josh Heupel, you know, relieved him of his duties. And, you know, Josh Heupel had to push reset on his coaching career and start over there. I think Josh Heupel's got great admiration and respect for the University of Oklahoma, his time at Oklahoma. I think he very much enjoyed playing there. Obviously, they were highly successful there. I don't think he has ill will towards the University of Oklahoma, but I don't think that they're sending Christmas cards. The Stoops family and the Heupel family are sending each other Christmas cards. And that's part of the business. Now, Josh Heupel he'll handle all those questions next week really well, as he should. Because again, I don't think he dislikes Oklahoma, Austin. I mean, that's my view of it. I've not sat down and had any kind of detailed conversation with Josh Heupel about it.
Well, and for background, he got fired after a year. The offense scored, 35 plus points a game. Stoops' brother was the defense coordinator.
And back then, 30 plus points was a lot of points.
Stoops' brother did not get fired, who was the defensive coordinator. And the offensive coordinator, who was Heupel, who scored 30 plus a game, got fired.
Yeah, I think that Heupel loved his time at Oklahoma as a player. Everybody that thinks he would just walk back there if they called. I mean, maybe, but I don't think it's some lock. I think he really likes Tennessee a lot. I think, he believes Tennessee is, has always kind of been a sleeping giant, and he's kind of woken up this giant, so to speak. And, I think as long as certain people are in play or in power or just even around at Oklahoma, I don't see him wanting to go back. Josh Heupel forgets nothing, and he has a long memory. So,
He's from South Dakota.
A wide receiver pass or a tight end pass with Princeton Fant against UT Martin in 2022. Up 60.
Yeah, I mean, it was. Yeah, I mean, he keeps score. I mean, that's part of his competitiveness about him. I'll say this: I believe he will get a really nice reception in Norman, Oklahoma.
I agree.
When he steps out on the field and they're out there, I think he will. Now, when you get ready to play the game, Oklahoma is going to want to beat his brains in, and he's going to want to beat Oklahoma's brains in because that's what you do. But I do think he'll get a nice reception, and there will be a lot of people that want to come up and some people who want to come up and say hi. Not all those people are still there because it's been a while. But I don't think his ill will is towards Oklahoma in any way, shape, or form.
In my opinion, I think it's very, very calculated that Bob Stoops in the last – several months has been very open and talking about Josh Heupel, very complimentary of Josh Heupel. I think either he was told or he recognizes, like, if Venables don't work out, they're going to give old Josh a call and he better fix this. And he can't be the reason that Josh Heupel wouldn't want to come home.
What's interesting is a lot of his compliments were about Josh Heupel as a player.
Player, correct.
Not Josh Heupel, the coach.
No, you're right, but it's his way of, I think, trying.
Yeah, I mean, it's the olive branch. It's just not a full extension of the olive branch, right?
And this head coach knows the difference.
We got plenty more questions to get into, but first let's get a word from our friends over at Factor Meals. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for the fall football season with a menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, Factor's Fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy these nutritious, great-tasting meals. Over 35 meals, 60 add-ons that you can choose from each and every single week. Treat yourself with restaurant-quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Keep kitchen time to a minimum. Factor Meals, again, 2 minutes, no shopping, no prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. It's an effortless support for your lifestyle. Choose 6 menu preferences to help manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, and simply eat well-balanced. Head on over to factormeals.com/VQ50. Use the promo code VQ50, and you're going to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. First box, 20% off your next month with subscriptions active. Again, that is factormeals.com/VQ50. Use the promo code VQ50, 50% off your first box plus 20% off next month. Go check it all out today at factormeals.com. And as always, a word from our friends, the presenting sponsor of the show, that is Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on, we got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Exterior Home Solutions. That phone number is 865-524-5888. Been local and trusted since 1999. We'll continue on with some questions before we look around the SEC ahead of the football weekend. Go Vols 23-23 has got a couple of questions. What positions will be the biggest focus in 2026 recruiting?
I think it's safety. I think it's defensive line. It's interior offensive line. It's running back. They really want to get Savion Hyder, the young man out of Virginia. That's their top tailback in the 2026 class. So certain numbers are. I mean, they've already got Faison, right? So you already checked off the quarterback position. They're always going to go for certain spots. They always want to add edge rushers. But as far as like what area do they really want to try to go after hard? I would tell you back end of the defense, maybe even linebacker, interior D-line, and then interior O-line.
This staff has proven to evaluate talent with the best of them. Can you explain the process from assistants that comb through film all the way up to the decision to the offer and how the recruiting board is set up? Do all offers have to go through Coach Heupel, or does he give assistants the authority to send out offers without his okay?
Go ahead, AP.
I mean, I think Coach Heupel gives, others the autonomy to, to throw out an offer, because at the end of the day, right now, Tennessee wants to get in the game, for some of these kids. Now, it's not as just cut and dry. You just can't just offer anybody. But, I mean, like, if it's one of those where he's like, I'd really like to manage that one, watch him a little bit more, but maybe we need to go ahead and get in the game, that type of thing. And then, maybe Tennessee ends up moving full speed ahead on a kid. Maybe they end up pulling back because they realize the kid's, not good enough. So that stuff happens a lot. But as far as like whether the kid's going to be a take or not, that's absolutely going to be Josh Heupel's call. You're sitting here, you just watch a lot of film. You have Brandon Lawson and Scott Altizer and, it used to be Trey Lawson, Trey Johnson. And some different people sit there and watch, film. They get it to the assistant coaches. The assistant coaches evaluate. Then they, decide whether or not to put it in front of Coach Heupel. And that's kind of how it trickles down the list as far as, watching film and how it gets in front of Coach Heupel.
Jabu wants to know which player on offense and defense has exceeded your expectations so far this season and why. I know we went around to the Monday night chat a little bit a couple of days ago. Rob, who's somebody that's exceeded your expectations so far?
I don't know about exceeding expectations, but just, I mean, a guy who's showing up, I think, more than he has in the past is Bryson Eason. I wouldn't say he's – I don't think it's fair to say he's come out of nowhere. We all thought he was a good player, but I think he's popping quite a bit. Certainly on Saturday night, maybe it's recency bias, but he's a guy that I think is showing up.
For me, it's Kitzelman.
Yep.
We talked about him in the spring and talked about him in the summer, and there was a lot of buzz and – you put the old qualifier on it. How many times, Austin, have we seen summer buzz out of somebody and it doesn't really turn into a whole lot of stuff? To me, he's the out of nowhere guy that was an afterthought. I mean, there was so little fanfare when he came in from the portal. Most people didn't even know he was a part of the team. So to me, through two games, it's Kitzelman's role in this tight end's room. The fact that he may be the most complete tight end they have on the roster. Probably is.
Yeah. I had a chance, he's going to be next week's Fall Club Confidential. And we had a, long talk about just, kind of like, I mean, he's very aware. Like, he's like, I've been doubted my whole life. The kid, coming out of high school, had no stars, was getting recruited to play Division II defensive end. And his dad and his uncle decided to push him to go and just go to JUCO, give it a shot and see what happens. And I don't want to give away the whole story because I think it's a really, really neat story about how, somebody kind of, basically like rode him really hard and then coached him really hard. And then he turns into, an SEC player. So, I think, he's a kid that's driven and he's really young. I mean, he's 21 years old. He turns 22 this month, but technically this is his last year of eligibility unless he can win some crazy appeal. you know, this is a one and done for him. And I mean, he'll be off to the NFL having played very little football outside of this year.
I think for me, and this one flies way under the radar, give me Andre Kieran. I think that he's played more snaps than the majority of the offensive line so far. And I think he's, I mean, certainly I'm not Glenn Ellerbe, but, you know, you look at some of the snap counts and some of the pass blocking grades, and he's performed well through two games. So just two games, but for a guy that missed some time and it's missed a lot of time in his career, I would say that's, you know, been a nice little pleasant surprise through two games for me so far. Josh Dobbs Burner, who would you say is the most complete wide receiver on the roster?
For me right now, it's Brew. I mean, I think Chris Braswell has all the tools. I think he's still learning in this offense, but the quickness and explosiveness that I've seen Brew come back with after the injury, to me, makes him the most complete. Because I think he's got more explosion than he had pre-injury, because I think he's leaner, and I think the work that he's put in. So I'm taking Brew right now.
And man, when you talk about a complete player, wide receiver, as a blocker, I mean, Brew McCoy's next level as a blocker.
Yeah, no doubt. He definitely is. Davey Vall says, any Tennessee commits to keep tabs on in terms of interest or visiting other schools? AP, anything to keep an eye on in terms of current commits in this class?
Welcome to the party, right, AP? Obviously, this level.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Gas took the visit to Georgia last weekend. Tennessee wants to get him back up here as quick as they can. You know, and he communicated with Tennessee before he went, so it's not like they were – totally blindsided by it. Travis Smith, you know, Tennessee's able to kind of, you know, make sure he didn't go to Auburn last weekend. Auburn's pushing hard there. But, I mean, if you're recruiting the right kind of players, then big-time schools are going to come try to flip them. And, you know, I think that's a good thing. I mean, it obviously is more of a headache for the coaches in season for having to, you know, do a lot more recruiting and babysitting a commitment, that type of thing. But, I mean, I think you always have to watch Jack Van Dorslayer, I think down in Texas, you know, we'll see, when he gets back up here for a game and all that. And then Justin Baker took that trip to North Carolina at the end of July. So you wonder, you know, kind of where he's at in the process. But, I mean, I don't think I think for the most part, most of them are locked in. But there's a few that, you know, are at least listening to other schools.
Well, and AP, I mean, there's a couple of things here to me I want to get your opinion on. But one, there's always a point in time where a player – gets, you know, they miss the attention, right? They miss the courting a little bit. I mean, they get tired of it and they commit and they go, you know, several weeks where nobody's really checking in on them. I mean, the school you're committed to is communicating with you, but you're not feeling, you know, the love and being courted by everybody. The other thing too is Tennessee's home schedule in the month of September has done them no favors.
Terrible, yeah.
I mean, because all these guys are taking trips, right? They want to take a trip and see somewhere. Okay, do I want to go to the school I'm committed to? Yeah, I want to go up and see a game. Well, we got a 12:45 against Chattanooga and a 7:45 against Kent State. Like, you know, I mean, the home schedule's not done them any favors at all at this point. Now, you say that, you go, well, I mean, Gas went and watched Georgia play Tennessee Tech. I get it, but I think
a 40-minute drive, too.
Yeah, I think a bunch of these committed guys are going to be in Knoxville for that Florida game. And I think that environment, I think that can help you a lot if you get to that point, because you just haven't had one of those to this point in your schedule.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have a lot of recruits here, both Florida and Bama. And then Kentucky's another big weekend, potentially. I mean, like David Sanders will be here this weekend. You'll have a few guys in town, some 26s and 27s. Tennessee, we talk about just how different the schedule is from the football standpoint. It also does have an effect on the recruiting. That's a great point.
We'll do our last question right here, and then we'll get into a look around the SEC. Cleveland 2854 wants to know, do you see any of these guys making a contribution this season? He lists four players. One's Jalen Smith, Nathan Robinson, Jamal Wallace, Tyree Weathersby. Rob, I would imagine a couple of those guys are going to make a contribution. Well, they've already been making some contributions.
Yeah, Jalen Smith, yeah, check that one. He made a big contribution Saturday night. I would say, I mean, Weathersby, yeah.
AP, it looks like Robinson and Wallace probably on the outside looking in, especially on that deep rotation right now.
Yeah, I agree with both. I mean, I agree with both on that. The only difference is for Nathan Robinson, he's already redshirted. So if he can get on the field, you get him out there. And Wallace, just because you're losing so many interior guys, I think it behooves Tennessee to redshirt him. So four games at most.
Yeah, I mean you're six. I mean you're six deep in the interior, which is a lot. I mean you're not going to get guys 25 snaps on that defensive interior. So getting depth there and getting guys, you know, going deeper than six is really hard to do. I think the Weathersby thing is interesting as he continues to knock off the rust. Where does he, you know, I think this is a big opportunity week for him to continue to kind of knock off the rust a little bit and see where he's at. I mean, Tyree West has played well. You know what you have there. But is this the game where you try to see, you know, how much Weathersby can go and where is he at as he gets more and more comfortable with this? And then Jalen Smith, hey, hats off to Jalen Smith. You know, I mean, he was an afterthought. And, you know, the moment came about because Caleb Perry couldn't go and he seized the opportunity. I thought he certainly looked like he belonged. He did not look like a fish out of water against NC State. And, you know, he'll get a bunch of run this week, I'm sure, as well. And he should take a ton of confidence out of what he did Saturday night. I mean, there's nothing about what he did that should make him feel bad about where he's at. So I'm be anxious to see him on Saturday, and I think we may get a chance to see Spielman on Saturday at linebacker too, after he's been battling that quad injury to help with some depth there, because you never know when you're going to need a body. And Jalen Smith gives you more comfort about your depth there.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say also, I criticize the coaches for not playing guys sometimes. I mean, they roll Jalen Smith, out there. And, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, Aaron Carter or Jeremiah Thielander or somebody had to play 50 snaps or something. I mean, it was next man up, and he was ready.
Yeah. I remember at the end of last year, Jalen Smith came on there against Vanderbilt in Iowa, and he played, you know, on kickoff team and played a little bit of defense. And I remember, I mean, he showed up for me in those games last year, kind of after that, you know, he could go in there and play, you know, four games and maintain your red shirt. So I was really happy for him. I thought he played pretty well in this game. Obviously, Saturday was the biggest role he's ever had, you know, playing with the regular defense. So he's one definitely that I think is above that line. Let's look around the SEC. Couple of cupcakes on the schedule this week, like Tennessee and, you know, obviously Kent State, but some really, really good ones as well. Which game, Brent, catches your eye around the SEC this week, and why is it Texas A&M and Florida?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's Texas A&M and Florida because we all – when it's not, when you're not covering the soap opera, you enjoy watching the soap opera, right? I mean, that's just kind of normal, or at least it is for me. I think Billy Napier's decision to try to manage both quarterbacks is a pretty fascinating route to go. You know, Graham Mertz got pummeled. I mean, he got beat because that Florida offensive line – was not very good against Miami. I put no stock in what they did against Samford because it's Samford. So, I mean, DJ Lagway can get out of the way. He can move around a little bit better. Do you need a mobile guy back there because of where you are with your offensive line? I just think it's hard when there's so much pressure on you. I think it's hard to say, hey, we're gonna rotate quarterbacks and, you know, DJ's got a role and we're going to ease him in. Because you know, Rob, that there's going to be a lot of people the first time Graham Mertz goes three and out, you know, there's going to be a lot of blue birds going in that deal there. So I think it's pretty fascinating to see what Florida looks like, where they are against an A&M team that's got their own quarterback struggles right now. I mean, I'm not impressed with what Wegman has produced to this point.
Especially after the bowl game, Rob, when, you know, Marcel Reed, who's from Nashville, played at NBA, I mean, he balled out. I mean, like, for the struggles they had on offense against Notre Dame, I just don't understand why you don't give another quarterback a shot, especially when he played in the bowl game and lit it up.
Yeah, I mean, we're not on the ground down there, and I don't know what, you know, what it looks like in practice, but, man, that's – I mean, we've all covered teams where quarterback play was an issue, and, you know, you can see – you can just tell guys are walking around saying the right thing. You know, I'm not talking about coaches. I'm talking about players, and I have a hard time believing those – A&M kids have a lot of confidence in the guy under center right now. And just the two quarterback thing, good gracious. I mean, I get it, what Napier's doing it, but I mean, wouldn't you just shove all your chips in the middle of the table and play Lagway? I mean, that's what I would do.
Because if it gets ugly on Saturday, I mean, is it too early to talk about maybe they'll let him go? I don't know. I mean, I'm with you, Rob. Like, if you're trying to play for your job or coach for your job, you better go with that freshman that has the higher upside, right?
I mean, look at your schedule. I mean, Graham Mertz, I mean, you're not going to win some of those games in the back, you know, the back half of your schedule with Graham Mertz. I mean, give the fans some hope.
So obviously that one's a big one around the SEC. A&M at Florida. A&M is currently about a 4-point favorite.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, you're good.
How fascinating are those roads? Ole Miss to Wake Forest, Alabama to Wisconsin. Can you imagine?
For an 11 a.m. kick.
I mean, those are some weird road trips. I mean, both SEC teams are huge favorites and will probably win, but I bet those coaches are, but the head coaches are not happy with whoever scheduled those two.
I mean, great for playing a matchup like that, right? Now, Austin, I mean, I think, you know, selfishly, we'd all like to go see what it's like at Camp Randall, I guess, at some point.
At nighttime, though, 11 a.m.?
Yeah, but I mean, they're not particularly good right now. And how does – I mean, Alabama doesn't need exposure. Like, what's the advantage to – scheduling that game? I mean, how does – I don't know. I mean, I don't see
– Why did they do South Florida last year?
Well, I agree. Why are you doing a home-and-home with South Florida? I mean
– they're just really weird. I mean, the only thing I can figure out with either one of those two is maybe him and Steve Forbes had plans in Winston-Salem Friday night.
Lane is trying to get a deal on he's trying, they're doing a One Tree Hill reboot on the CW. Since that game's on CW, he's trying to be a part of that.
I tell you what, I think Ole Miss is pretty good. I mean, I know they haven't played anybody yet of note, but I think that's a – I think this is probably the best team, the deepest team that he's had. So, I think they will manhandle Wake Forest in this game. But I think Ole Miss is kind of what a lot of people thought they were going to be in the preseason. Now they got to stay healthy, and we'll see if they, you know, how they handle themselves against better competition. But they have not disappointed to this point with what they've gotten done. Much like Tennessee is not disappointed. I think you can make the case that, you know, outside of Texas, those two have been, you know, two of the most impressive, not the other, the next two most impressive teams in SEC play to this point, given who they, you know, given what they've looked like.
Top 25 matchup, number 24, Boston College at number 6, Missouri. We know about Missouri's schedule and how easy that is. This is obviously one of the tougher non-conference games on its schedule. Boston College, big win earlier in the year, obviously, taking down Florida State's. But Mizzou's a huge, I think it's like a 17-point favorite at home, and I assume Missouri's going to roll this one.
I think this is a sneaky game. I think Missouri wins this game, but I think this one's got some intrigue to it because I think Boston College plays a pretty physical brand of football. They want to try to run it and sort of cram it down your throat, so we'll see where Missouri's defense is playing against a really good, you know, a team that likes to run it, play ball control. Boston's college challenge is this will be the first time they played against a forward pass in two games this season. So their secondary look good at Tallahassee, but that doesn't mean anything with where the Florida State passing game is right now. So how are they defensively? I mean, I thought their secondary look was good, but I don't think that means anything when you're playing where Florida State's passing offense is right now.
Don't. Yeah, and Missouri's name of ukulele.
Missouri, I mean, has played nobody, but as the numbers, they've got the top-ranked defense in the league right now in total yardage. So I'm just going to be interested. Can they shut down Boston College on the ground? Because, I mean, that they look pretty good against Florida State.
The little quarterback, he's crafty.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing about, you know, we'll see how long it stays. We'll see how long Bill O'Brien stays there and everything. But clearly they're trying to create a brand and an identity at Boston College, which is – something that I think they've struggled with on a consistent basis. He wants to play a certain style, play a certain way. They're going to try to confuse Brady Cook. I mean, they're going to try to be pretty exotic defensively and do some different things with some NFL flair to it because he's got a lot of NFL in that coaching staff. So I'm intrigued by that one. I think Missouri wins, but that one could be sneaky good, better than everybody thinks that it's going to be.
Oklahoma Tulane. This one I think could be sneaky. Depending on how Oklahoma plays offensively, scoring 16 points against Houston last week doesn't get you excited. Tulane can it's a lot of changes there from last year, obviously, but you know, put up, gosh, I forgot how many they put up last week in that loss, but they put up some points in that loss last week. This one could turn into something, but the Sooners are two touchdown favorites at home, but one you can't sleep on. This is one of those I would define as a trap game. Tell me if you disagree, because you got a monster game coming up next week if you're Oklahoma.
It's a trap game, 1,000%.
Yeah.
The thing I'm looking for Oklahoma is, what does their offense look like? Because they have not been very good. I don't count the first week. Last week they had a really dud game. The offensive line has severely struggled. That was a point of contention all offseason. What does their offense look like? How many points did they put up? I mean, okay, let's say they win by two scores, but is it – if they only put up 28 points against Tulane, you know, or 24 points and win 24-10, like, I mean, how good do you feel, you know, if you're Oklahoma and you're getting ready to play Tennessee? So, I mean, like, you know, I think, you know, for them, they need to kind of wake up and see what – you know, get the offense going a little bit, because right now, you know, one bad game's, you know, can be an outlier. Two is a trend.
Yeah, and I mean, all their fans are worried about Jackson Arnold, and I get it. They should be, but I mean, against two not great teams, or I mean, bad teams, they haven't been able to run the football. If I'm an Oklahoma fan with that a young quarterback, that's what worries me the most. I mean, they're way down. As far they're over 100 yards a game, but it has not been impressive. I mean, they're averaging, you know, a little over 4 yards a carry against Temple and Houston. That's a red flag.
Out the door, it was 30 yards passing against the mighty Gamecocks of South Carolina last week for Brock Vandegrift. Takes on Georgia this week. Rob Lewis, is he going to throw for more or less than his total last week?
Gerald Mincy's got to stay healthy. Got to play four quarters. Keep him clean in that one. But I'd say I'll take over 30. Take over 30.
Yeah, I'll take over 30. Are we not going to talk about the Shane Beamer LSU Express?
Oh, yeah. I just skipped over that one. My fault.
I think that was a pretty fascinating game to watch. I mean, I don't think South Carolina's 2-0, tip of the cap to them, right? They won 31-6 in Lexington and put up 252 yards. That game was 10-6 at the half, and was like, you know, then they pulled away. South Carolina's defensive front is salty. They're good. The freshman off the edge is legit. He's a ball player. LSU can't run it. I mean, it clearly feels like that there's, I don't want to say dissension in the ranks, but I mean, I don't think they're all holding hands and singing Kumbaya, right? Brian Kelly doesn't seem to love this team, doesn't love the way they prepare, doesn't love their intensity. Noon game on in Columbia, right? If I'm not mistaken, I think it's a noon start. I don't know about this one here now. I think LSU, I don't think South Carolina can move the ball effectively against LSU. I don't think, but man, if they find a couple plays, that might be enough in this one.
Way more to lose if you're LSU.
Oh.
If you're South Carolina and you lose this game, you're 2-1. You would have taken that before the year started. If you're LSU and you're 1-2 coming out of this game, and it's tip of the goggles, Hubs. Tip of the goggles.
glasses,
whatever you want to call them. South Carolina.
Little Norris has made – I mean, he's made a couple of Louisville plays, but he's made a couple of other plays where you go, man, there's some potential in there. It's just can they harness any of it? I think we all felt going into the season that LSU was overhyped, based on all that they lost and, you know, how much would they really revamp this defense in a year's time. It feels like everybody that we were probably right on that LSU's not in that upper tier, right? When you look at, I mean, I know it's 2 weeks in, but I mean, don't you guys feel like Texas and Georgia kind of separated themselves, and Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Alabama, it's kind of those five with LSU on the out, and Missouri, I guess, would be the six.
I was going to say, Hubbard, you're not standing on business at all? Late ad.
Well, with that schedule, everybody should stand on business, right?
I agree with that. I think there's a clear separation from what we've seen so far for LSU. LSU and Oklahoma would be more or less in the same category behind the mid-tier of, you know, Tennessee and Ole Miss, Missouri, and Alabama, and then Texas and Georgia at the top for sure. Still a lot of time, still a lot of football to be played, but I mean, you can't run the football. I know there's some injuries there. Defensively, they haven't shown a whole lot of improvement from last year, even though you got some really good players at spots. And you lost a really good quarterback. And I think Nussmeier's fine. I think Nussmeier's a solid quarterback, but not Jaden Daniels. So, like, you're not going to be scoring over 40 a game this year. So far, I'm not surprised with LSU. But, again, you go on the road, and not like South Carolina's great, but you go on the road and win convincingly, then, okay, maybe it's a different conversation next week. So, SEC football is here. There's some matchups. Of course, Tennessee's SEC opener will be next week in Oklahoma. One more game to go before that happens. It's at 7:45 Eastern time at Neyland Stadium against Kent State. We'll have plenty of coverage leading up to kickoff all week long, all Saturday long. We'll have coverage during the game and tons of post-game coverage after the game. All that and more, it's over at VolQuest.com. For Rob Lewis, Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. A huge thank you, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. For a free estimate, give them a call today at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody. Appreciate you listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.